Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode number 12, Darla Flack. The cool thing that you're going to hear about Darla is that she started out in the accounting profession, but then moved into direct marketing. From there to eBay, to Amazon FBA, and now into information selling services. And I think that that trend, I'm seeing a real pattern here. The successful sellers that I'm interviewing, they have all have the ability to do that. They could just move from one to the other, and it's pretty seamless. It's almost like they're building on the previous efforts that they did, and it just gets better and better, and it's really impressive, and I think Darla's a really good example. We spent some time talking about a service that she offers with Brittany Ross, REI Shinemine, and Ryan Grant. And I just want to make sure that you understand is that I don't buy their service. They don't pay me for their service. I take a look around. I require they let me go in and take a look around so I can just see and you know, use my judgment for myself to say, hey, would I pay for this service? And to be honest with you, I would. The reason I see it is it's a segmented service, which I think is great. It's a service that's a little harder to get into those categories. So there is a barrier to entry. If you value your time, you have to figure out what you can do and what you can hire others to do. And so don't jump in. Pull back, think about it, and see if this service might be right for you. And there are lots of other great services. So, you know, this is a segmented service. But again, I'm not benefiting in any way. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight we have a really exciting guest, Darla Flack. Hi. And Darla's been selling on eBay for about 8.5 years, Amazon for about 3 years. Really that neat transition that I think a lot of sellers have done. She has her family involved. I can't wait to hear about that. She is currently still primarily wholesale, but is running into some issues, and I think that's going to be something we can talk about. And then has really followed a pattern that I'm seeing develop with really successful sellers, moving from eBay to Amazon into other things and then into the information business, and Darla has some of that going on too. So welcome, Darla.
Thank you
for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. So let's just talk a little bit about you. So you've been selling on eBay for 8.5 years. What were you doing prior to that?
I was an accountant.
Ah.
And then I also was in direct sales, which I don't know. I mean, quite a few people have been in direct sales before, which is sort of how this whole eBay thing got started. Because when you quit direct sales, you tend to have maybe prizes or supplies. And I sold those off. And my friends, because when you get into a direct sales, your friends are in with you. And when one of them starts to leave, you all start to leave. I don't know if you've ever been part of that. Anyway, so I was just getting rid of this stuff. And they're like, how are you doing that? And I said, well, I'm just putting it on eBay. And so they asked me if I would sell this for them, which started consignment. And then I was on a message board that it was sort of getting out of this direct sales business. We were just kind of discussing things. And it got around that I was doing this, and pretty soon I had boxes coming from all over the U.S., and I found that I was working for someone else again, which wasn't my thing. And everybody, you know, they send their stuff, but they want their things to come first before the 40 boxes in front of them, which doesn't work very well. So then I just decided, well, I can liquidate some of the product, not the prizes, but the product, and that's how I started getting into eBay. And that just kind of took off on its own. So it's weird how you get out of one thing, but you still kind of end up.
You had some skills that clearly, right. You know, first off, being an accountant doesn't necessarily generally make you a very good direct salesperson. So that's a very interesting dichotomy. Usually they're stoic opposites, right? They're usually not the same skill sets.
Exactly.
Although I guess if you're a partner, you would have to sell accounts. But so where does that entrepreneur spirit come from?
Oh, my dad. He owned a jewelry store from the time I was born till the time he passed away. He had never worked for anyone else. So I didn't know that. I mean, I went to work for someone else for a while when I was young, but I didn't really know any other way, you know, other than to own your own business. It just never occurred to me.
Did you work in the jewelry store too growing up?
Just during inventory time. I mean, I was probably like the world's worst daughter because I was just not interested in what my parents were doing.
Well, the accounting, there's the accounting coming out in your inventory time. Everybody's got to get involved in that. That's really interesting. So one cool thing about your business is you have some family involved in the business, some still and some not so still, right? So tell us about that.
Well, my husband has a very full-time job. He's the chief of police. So besides doing that, he also does all of our shipping when it's not quarter four. I do sort of help in quarter four, but I'm pretty crabby warehouse worker. So they try to, you know, get it so I don't help because I'm just so crabby about it. But he does all of the shipping quarters one, two, and three. And my son used to work for us until he turned 18 and he kind of figured out that mom wasn't the most fun boss he'd ever had in the world. You know, when your mom is your boss and your mom, it's sort of two sets of instructions coming at you all the time. So this summer he got a job, not with us. And so he hasn't been doing that. So we've had to adjust the way we do business.
You know, he's going to enjoy working for other people. And then he's going to come back and say, oh,
absolutely,
maybe that wasn't so bad. You know that. Exactly. And that's a great lesson. My college son is home right now working with us. And, you know, I want him to stay in college for a reason. I'm like, come on, buddy. Otherwise, this is the kind of work you're going to get. And you want to really think that through.
Yep.
So do you have a warehouse and everything, or are you working out of your house?
We work out of our home.
No kidding. Are you receiving pallets and things?
We can, because we live in rural Iowa, so we can receive pallets, not a problem.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Wow. I mean, that's great. yeah, I'm thinking about how big of an operation. You're a pretty big seller. And you obviously didn't start at that place. How many years did it take for you to figure out the FBA model and then not only move from retail into the online and then into wholesale? How did you get that figured out?
Well, I'm not really sure I have it all figured out yet. I think it's always a learning process as you try to grow. I do know it seemed like an easy transition for me from retail to online on eBay, because it's a little, eBay's mentality can be a little bit slower and you can work at your own pace. And it makes more sense because you acquire the product, you list the product, it sells, you ship it. That seems like a common sense, you know, factor, but that was an easy transition for me. The biggest transition that I had was from eBay to Amazon. I honestly was so miserable. I cried for probably 3 months straight every day. I would say to my husband, I don't want to do it. I don't like this. And I know a lot of people come into it and they're like all excited. But, you know, I'd had a really great routine and eBay was wonderful to me until the traffic started to fall off and the prices started to fall. And it was just, we had to move. But change is hard when you really liked what you were doing. And my husband kept saying, no, I really think we need to pursue this. I really think we need to. And he just kind of kept pushing and pushing along. He's very mentally tough. And so he taught me a lot during that time to just, you know, get mentally tougher and just keep right on doing it, even when it just sucks so bad. But the hard part, I think, for Amazon, if you've sold on eBay or in brick and mortar store or any sales, is that you acquire the product on Amazon, and then you ship it to Amazon, and there's nothing until then it gets there, goes in a warehouse. You've lost all control of what you're used to having control of. And so that transition for me, it was horrible. I couldn't seem to get it. So that was the worst part for me. The rest of it wasn't hard at all.
Has this become a job for you at the level you're at, or is it still, you know, and I know there are ups and downs,
right?
But are there more ups than downs at this place, at this point?
Well, we're in July and August, and I feel like those are always a little bit of downtime of sales. You know, it's not that high where you're selling, you know, that huge volume that we like to sell as entrepreneurs. We like to have that rush all the time. So this is probably a question more so that's ebb and flow. And right now it feels like a job because we're getting ready for quarter four. There again, you know, it's that whole prep thing. And once you get into it in that rush, you're so grateful that you did it. But that prep to be mentally tough and just do it when you're not seeing any results. It's like working out that first few months. You're like, look, and nothing's happening. So you know, you just have to kind of push through. Right now, it feels like a job. Come quarter four, it feels amazing. And then quarter one, it falls into that. And that's awesome because you're still riding that high. But right now, we're in that dip. And I think that's an important part of our entrepreneurship is to understand the dip and to be okay with it. And to know that even if it feels like a job today, doesn't mean that it will in 3 months. This all changes.
I just watched a interview, or I guess it was just one of the Gary V episodes, and he was talking about he looks at his life in a net way, and that just makes so much sense to me. Is that, you know, you're going to make a mistake, or you're going to have some success, but you just want to look at it in a net, you know, maybe by the week or by the month or by the year over year or what have you,
right.
And it will even out for you,
right.
You know, because that's life, right?
That is so true because, I mean, if you look at your marriage, you've been married a long time. Not every year is a wonderful year, but overall, you think this is a great marriage.
Absolutely.
And that's how entrepreneurship is.
I'm interested in your whole process, right? So you're receiving a lot of inventory. Or are you using an inventory company also to help?
We went on vacation in March, and because I live nowhere, we drove. And so we were gone about 11 days. In order to do that, you do have to use a prep service. I think you do anyway. And then I continued to use them for a little while. But there again, no, we're back now to doing it ourselves.
Yeah, I know I have a friend who just moved all his stuff to the prep service because he wants to expand. And he's like, look, I have all these people coming to my house. It just isn't working.
Yeah, I know
I need to get there.
I saw his video and I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. It is a crazy situation. Well, I've used one that's been around for a while, and I haven't had a need for it because we've worked down the process. I think that, you know, I was talking to Beaver Vino the other day, and we had a great conversation. And one of the things that we talked about is that I'm saying no more than I say yes about buying inventory. And so because of that, we've just gotten so much smarter.
Mm-hmm.
We're processing so many fewer items at such higher dollars.
Yes, that's what we had to switch. When my son went to work for someone else, we were missing a body. The only way to do that is either hire another body, which I don't want, or figure out how to sell higher priced items.
So how did you go about figuring that out?
Well, when what's really helped us is getting ungated in some of those categories like shoes, handbags, jewelry, and clothing. You know, those can be some higher ticket items. And we all know how much, like, maybe you know how much your wife spends on a handbag or shoes, or how much your kids spend on a pair of tennis shoes. So that's how, you know, that's helped a ton.
There are items that we used to sell that I pass now. We just don't even look at them anymore because for exactly that reason. Or I look at it from a prep point of view, right?
Yeah.
If I have to prep it, I'm like, I think we'll pass on that.
Unless
we'll just move over to something else.
Like an entire case of pallet or whatever in 20 minutes. Because, you know, if it comes in wholesale and it's all case backed and you just either slap labels on it or send it right off to Amazon or have it shipped right to Amazon, you can't mess with it. When you get to our level, you just can't mess with it anymore.
It's funny you mentioned that you're in jewelry, given your father's business.
Yes.
There is something full circle about that. But, you know, shoes, and I want to jump into this now because I'm interested in a service that you guys offer. So you partnered with two of the smarter guys that I know, REA and Ryan.
And Brittany Cost, who's also Brittany.
And, yeah, I don't know Brittany. I saw that there was a fourth person. And tell me about how did that come about? Where did that come from?
REA just sent me a PM one day and asked me, I can't even remember. It was so long ago. It was like last October, and he sent me a PM and I was like, sure. So in December we started, vetting VAs and Ryan Grant came on board in, I think we had known even in October that Brian Grant and Brittany were going to be on board. And then December we started vetting the VAs and we vetted them for 4 full months because we were all so nervous. That, you know, what if this isn't a good, like, what if we don't get good VAs? What if the product that we're offering doesn't really sell as good as we think? You know, what if these offerings aren't that great? It would be just better right now to use it as our own VAs and, you know, see what happens. And then in April, we went live.
Okay, and the name of the site is called YourSourcedInventory.com.
Right.
Y-O-U-R, sourced. Inventory.com. And so the concept is, the way I read it, I've been nosing around the Facebook group. Darla, let me look around a little bit. And there is a free Facebook group that people can join, and you actually get to see some of the style of deals and the information you would get as a paid member, right? So there's a paid component and there's a free component.
Right.
So let's talk about the free component first, and then we can talk about the paid component.
Okay. So do you want me to tell you about the free?
Yeah,
free
sure. Go ahead. Just walk us through.
As a general rule, because I think all four of us in the partnership kind of have the general mentality that we like a safety net of extra leads in case we need them. So we've been sharing some deals that aren't as fabulous as what go out in our mailer, but at the same time, they can still make you some money. And if you're totally unfamiliar with shoes and clothing, you at least get to see, like, here's a site I hadn't thought about shopping at before, because we have some unusual sites that, you know, they're not your Walmart and your Kohl's, your basic sites. They're different from that. They veer off. So if nothing else, you kind of get an idea, oh, money can be made over here.
Do a lot of the deals have the limits, you know, you can only buy three? Well, I saw somebody out there talking today about Best Buy, and they tried to buy X number of units, and they were shut down because they didn't want to sell to a reseller or something like that. Do you run into a lot of that, or do you notify people of that saying, hey, there is a limit of three?
Actually, if we notice that there's a limit, and you know, we're not perfect people, and we just do the best job that we can, but if we notice there's a limit, or like, let's say when we get the information from the VA, when we click it to vet it, if we notice that, hey, there's only two left in stock, it doesn't even go out to the people.
Okay,
the
it doesn't go out. Are you guys all, guys collective, I don't mean that as a man and woman, are you all buying from the group too?
No. We do not buy anymore from the group. We did when it was first and we were vetted. Every once in a while on the extras lead, of course, we will use those because they're not going out to the clients.
Okay. So in the client, the paid portion, there's a limit of how many members?
50.
And 50 members.
Right. And once we reach 50, we'll just start a new list. So it'll have totally different offerings. So if people wanted to join the list twice, they could. They wouldn't get the same offerings. But we are not going to go past that 50. No matter what.
You know, so it's 50 people that get 10 items a day, 5 days a week.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
Okay. And the odds of those 50 people buying all 10 leads every day,
it just doesn't happen.
I mean, at some point, it just doesn't happen.
Smart. Do you to buy all 10 leads from a list every day? I just can't. You know, there's lots of different sizes and colors and, that's a lot of cash out.
The thing I was doing some math backwards, looking at the numbers, right? So you're saying that it's a 50% margin,
right?
And I looked at the average sale, and it's well over $35. It looked like to me most of those deals, even though they're not so good ones.
Right.
So you know, a person can go into it and say, hey, because it costs how much is it a month?
$149
a month.
Right.
So you know, couple dollars a day.
Right.
Right.
Well, and it depends because there's lots of different sizes and lots of different colors. And one thing is our VAs are trained to put some sizes down in colors, but not to spend all their time on one SKU. And we, you know, even if they list, if for instance, a SKU has, they've listed out 10 different colors and that's all on the one SKU, that's only considered one listing.
Are you recommending that new sellers come in and jump in these kind of groups?
If they do, I think they need to join our free group. And we have decided that we need to educate the newer sellers and even some of the older sellers who are new to clothing and shoes, because I think sometimes people get mixed up on the ranks and how deep they should go. And I think we probably, you know, need some education on that and to pass on what we have learned over now. It's been, you know, abusing VAs for just shoes and clothing for at least 8 months, some of us for longer. And I think we need to pass that information on because I don't know that's an easy category to decipher.
I think you're right. I sell a lot of shoes and there is a longer lead time. There are a lot more returns and those things need to be factored in, especially for those people that are borrowing money to do this
kind of thing.
I mean, it's something they need to really think about, you know, when
When you have returns on shoes though, does Amazon actually return them back to you? Or are they sellable?
I have not received any back yet.
Right. So you get a return, and the good thing is they go right back in your inventory. The bad thing is it's still a return.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't get very many back at all. And in fact, in all the shoes I've ever sold, I've had two pair that have been worn.
We have 12, I think we're running about 12% shoe returns right now.
Oh, we're doing about 6%. So yeah, I think it's, okay, somewhere in there. But I also think the more you sell, the better your ratio,
Yeah, sure. That would make sense, right? Right. Yeah. That's not our number one category, but right. Interesting. So you're in with these guys and you create this list. This list is vetted by somebody in the group.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that, somebody's rehashing a list, because that's one of the things that I've seen out there. I've heard, I don't want to say I've seen it, I've heard this, that certain VAs work for many different companies and they just move stuff from the same list from one person to another. Have you experienced that? Are you checking for that?
VAs, yes. And REA is in charge of the firing and the hiring and the training. So you know it's being done well. And yes, we watch them on Odesk. We watch exactly what they do. I call it, I've got to go babysit now, because it can be a little bit of what it's like to have a VA, and you have to go and watch what they're doing on your Odesk account. Well, it's not called Odesk. I don't know what it's called anymore. And so you go in and you watch them work, and if you can tell if they're working for someone else too.
Do you have any success stories that you can talk about, a seller? You don't have to name them, but, Mr. X or Mrs. X, that what they've been able to do. How long has the group been going?
Since April, mid-April.
Okay, so a few months, 3 months or so. Has anybody come back and said, wow, I can't believe what this has done for my business?
They have not given us anything specific, and that's probably our fault because we haven't asked for testimonials. And that's not necessarily a good thing. I don't think that, I think we need to probably get out there and ask for testimonials.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful for people to see. But I did notice there's quite a discussion going on in the Facebook group, and I think that that's really exciting. And it looks like you guys are answering some of those questions.
Sure. We will answer whatever if we have the answer. I mean, we don't have the answer to everything. We are still only 4 people. But we will answer whatever question that you have.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, it sounds like a really cool service. I wish you guys really well with it. People can join the Facebook group for free.
Right.
It's called, it's Facebook.com, of course, groups, and then it's called Your Sourced Inventory. Okay. So how do they just ask to join, and then you guys somehow vet them?
Yeah. Now, okay. We just let them people in. I don't think anyone's a troublemaker in our, within our group. And if they are, then they're just gone, whatever. You know how this goes.
And that's great. And so people can, and that's going to be your pool that you'll fill your 50, and if somebody falls out, you would look for somebody there. That's the real way to really jump into that other group. Okay.
Sure.
Good. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Very cool. Well, I'm going to take us to break. Okay. And when we come back, I want to hear about where you're going in the future, what you see. We talked a little bit earlier offline about wholesale, and I'm interested to discuss some of that. Okay. And I'm really interested to see how you're going to continue to grow your business.
Okay.
Okay. So take it to break. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back into podcast, this segment, I think there's a couple of really cool things that you should pay attention to. One, we spent some time talking about the downsides of wholesale. And if you bought wholesale, we have, you buy a lot, and everything's great, and then all of a sudden you're stuck with half of it. Not all the time, of course. So there's really an art to figuring out what to buy, how much to buy. And I know there are a couple of fellows out there who have really figured that out, have really built models for that, and that might be worth researching before you decide to jump heavily into it. We talk about trade shows and some of the value there. But I think the best part of the conversation, actually two parts. One is where she talks about how she personally slows down in the summer because the business slows down. So, really take advantage of that time and, don't complain that sales are slow. Turn off and pull back because that's the time you need to recharge and to get ready. And so that's really a good time for you to personally pull back and recharge. The other thing that I think is really cool is I think Darla has figured out how to segment this business into her life. She's not building her life around this business. She's saying, here's the amount of time, here's the amount of effort, here is where it fits in our lives. And it can change. You know, she's putting a son into college. Well, that takes a lot of effort for anybody who's gone through it. We'll appreciate that. Well, guess what? That means something else has to give. And in her case, she has the ability to adjust her business model that way. I think that's such a smart, smart thing to do rather than go, 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 to pull back and just put it in its proper place. I think we can all benefit from that. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back from break, and we are talking with Darla Flack.
Hey.
And we were talking about just a myriad of things, and we got into a very cool discussion about a group that she's involved in called YourSourcedInventory.com, and I really think it's something worth looking at, the free side of it, and then decide if it's right for you.
Right.
Again, you know, be careful about, you know, jumping into these other new categories with credit, you know. Be careful with that kind of stuff. That's just something that kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
But you've really changed your business model, you know, from that eBay, from the old direct sales model, right? And you were wholesale really, really heavily.
Right.
And then earlier you had mentioned that some of those wholesale accounts or items,
mm-hmm,
Amazon's coming in on. Mm-hmm. Is that, I can't imagine that they're saying, hey, let's charge more, right?
Right.
So talk about that a little bit for us.
Well, some of the items, I think, wholesale, even wholesale, can become cyclical. So you even though you're wholesale, you still have to be looking for new sources, and you have to be finding new lines or new products within that line. So I had kind of run into some dead ends because I think eventually a product dies out. For instance, I sold, you're going to laugh, I sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I probably sold nearly 1,000. Turquoise owls. I know, isn't that
all right?
Strange?
I am gonna laugh. I mean,
I know. Two
turquoise
years ago, I couldn't
owls.
Keep them in stock, and the warehouse couldn't keep them in stock, and they were always on back order. And I thought, this is crazy. But of course, there is a time where that comes to an end. So you know, you have to keep looking for things. As I have looked for more products to stock, I have found Amazon is on by far more products than I can ever remember them being on before. And so either you have to bring product to market, which is not a bad thing. You just have to learn how to make your product pages, or you have to accept lesser margins because a lot of times, even though it's not Amazon on them, there are people who think they're Amazon and they run their margins about the same.
Yeah.
And maybe
yeah,
they're getting a better deal than I'm getting. I mean, we have no idea how they're working their deals because everybody is different. Everybody's at a different level. And so maybe they're still making a really good margin. It's just that, you know, that product for me is no longer viable. So when I got in to shoes and clothing and decided to start pursuing that and learning that, of course, using a retail level to do that is probably a little bit safer because you can order 2, 3 and not go so deep. And they don't, you know, I have found with shoes and wholesale, I do have an account of wholesale and a couple of them, and they make you start off with like a starter pack of this many of these sizes. And so, well, you have to start with this. Well, when you're on retail, you can just pick your, like, if you decide you want to do the really popular sizes for men, which would be like, what is that, men 9 to 11, and for women 7 to 9. Or you can be the outlier and you can do the really large sizes and the really small sizes, you know, so you can kind of pick and choose. You don't have to do them all. And that's why I've kind of switched over. Since I'm learning these new categories, I don't want to go very deep.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Are you going to trade shows to find items?
I have in the past. I went to America's Mart a couple of times, and then I went to Minneapolis Mart, which is like a totally different level. We had scheduled 2 full days to spend at Minneapolis Mart because America's Mart, you could spend 20 days and never get through it all. And we were done in like 4 hours. So that's the difference. I mean, in size. And we are planning to go back in a couple weeks just to see what they have to offer for holidays, and then we'll go retail sourcing while we're up there, so it won't be a wasted visit. But, you know, trade shows are kind of a crapshoot, and you can always find something. I mean, we're good enough that after, and you're good enough, and there are tons of sellers that are by far better, who could go into a trade show, and you pick out the unusual, and that's what you're looking for, kind of, is the unusual. So you can, you know, pick and choose what you want, but you really, you don't want to kind of stick to the mainstream. You don't, you know, everybody sells, like, I don't know, a New York cup, for instance. No, you know, there's nothing special about that unless it has some special brand, but, you know, like, to stay away from white mug, you're not going to just sell a white mug or a red mug. You want to stay away from those type of stores, or I guess they're vendors there. Sorry. And try to find something that's unique about that particular line for you to invest in. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's very hard to find something at a gift mart if you're not looking for the unusual, like the turquoise owl.
But that's a great piece of advice, right? So,
what,
again,
is it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the key is you can't follow the herd, is really what I think you're saying, is you really do have to find a way to stand out a little different, because, you know, I mean, I think of some of the products that we used to sell. Now there's 150 sellers selling exactly the same thing, and Amazon on the account. So guess what? We don't sell it anymore, right? But, you know, when you find a product when there's two or three sellers, especially when there's no FBA sellers, right, then you can really do really well with it. And right, with the right marketing, you can really move it up in rank, you know, if you find the right,
that's,
you know, you just got to watch trends. How did you get the skill set of watching trends? Where did that come from?
Well, probably because I am sort of a fanatical, I love to redecorate things, and that's where that came from. And I follow bloggers who redecorate, and it just was a hobby. So
you've invested time, though, continuously.
Sure.
to read. So there's another piece of advice, right? So, you know, if you're in crafting, for example, there are tons of information places you can keep up with the crafters. You could start to see a pattern and see ahead.
Right.
And I think that's a good piece of advice. Yeah. What do you think your biggest strength is? I mean, you're pretty confident, pretty determined. What do you think your biggest strength is?
I'll just keep at it till I figure it out. It'll bug me till I get it. I'm just one of those people.
So just determination. You're just going to be successful no matter what.
I don't know if I'm going to be successful, but I'm going to figure out whatever it is that I think isn't working. Like, I might not see the other parts of my business that aren't working, because we all are blindsided sometimes by things that we believe are working that really aren't. You know what I mean? Like, we all think something's working that just really isn't.
And but you don't become myopic, do you? Where, you know, you're on something, you're going to fix this piece of the business, and that's all you're looking at? Is that this?
No, but what I mean is, What I'm trying to say is, I'm not perfect. I don't see every flaw that's wrong in our business. But what the things that I do see, I will work at till I feel like I've got it figured out, even if I don't. No, I'm not myopic, and I'm not a perfectionist. Maybe that's my strength. I'm not a perfectionist.
Okay, I like that. I really like that. I think that's a great point, is you're not – I interviewed Greg Murphy, and he mentioned, and I think it still sticks with me. I used it in my Sunday school class the other day. He's satisfied with 80%. He's like, Steve, if I could get my employees to do 80%, that's good enough, because guess what? I'm not much more than 80% most of the time.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's just so great to think that way. You know, everybody's, oh, I'm perfect. No, I'm far from perfect. And I just think you're saying the same thing, and I think that's a great strength. I think that's a great strength. So is your weakness – well, they come up with a weakness for me then.
Well, I don't – I think probably my weakness is that I don't always see everything that's wrong. You know, I don't catch everything that's wrong. But my true weakness, honestly, I don't know if it's a – this isn't personality, but I have a couple chronic illnesses that leave me exhausted, and so I have to fight that. And that I feel like is a weakness for me, because I was just at a conference this weekend and everybody's up until way past midnight, and then they're back up and they're all energetic, and I feel like I need another cup of coffee. Yeah, so that's probably it.
Have you gotten to the place where your business is now part of your lifestyle?
Absolutely.
I mean, do you feel that way?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, neat. Neat. That's neat, because these are all, you know, very common traits of the successful entrepreneur or the successful e-commerce seller that I'm seeing, is that they have found not a balance. There's no such thing as balance. They have found a place of comfort for them.
Yeah.
because it's different for each person of where they want this business to be. And sounds like you're there.
Right. We had to work really hard. And my mental mindset, probably a weakness, is that I can be a workaholic, but I soon realized that I was really miserable doing that. So I make sure that in the summertime, I work the fewest amount of hours possible since it's really cold here in the winter. And we have to spend time inside. I'm not going to spend my time inside in the summer.
That makes sense too. And you just talked about how it slows down. So that's a natural occurrence. It should happen.
Right.
Let it slow down. You slow down and take advantage of it. How about anything that you're struggling with? It sounds like the wholesale, not a struggle, it's just something you're trying to figure out. And I don't think you're different than anyone else. Anybody who thinks that wholesale is easy, they're kidding themselves.
Right.
It is a continual evolution, right? It is evolving every day. It's good today. That product, as you say, it wanes and it might come back, but it might not.
Right.
And so I think the art is buying the right quantity for that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? What are you struggling with other than, and I don't want to use that you're struggling with wholesale.
Well, one thing that I can't seem to take the jump is private label.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's a scary thing for me because the insurance aspect of it, when we found out, you know, that it's a little bit more complicated than, I believe Andy Slammons has said this, that, you know, that he, when I first joined his private label group, he gives great information, but he had a policy that was really, really economical. And then I guess the company decided that they weren't going to do that any longer. And so there's been some revamping of figuring out a new insurance. And that's what scares me, the liability part of that. And then the cost of the new insurance that it would take. I would just wonder at what point, if you're just going to kind of dabble in it, is it worth it?
Yeah, I the other piece of advice that Andy gives about private label is, you know, to create bundles. He said, you know, if you really come down to it, a bundle is a private label,
right?
And so his advice is, you know, if you're afraid of that other side of it, and I'm with you, is to put sneakers and socks and, I don't know, odor eaters together as a bundle. And that is the ultimate gym locker bundle, whatever, and put your UPC label on and call it your, you know, I think that kind of makes sense. I just don't want to do the work of that.
Right. Right.
So, well, I'm with you in a private label. I've done deals, but I do deals. I buy from other people. So I've done several private label deals, but I'm buying from other people who own the product. So I'm kind of wholesaling through them.
Yeah.
And so it's a win-win. I pay a little bit of a premium because their time is valuable.
Right.
I partner with Andy on a couple of deals and his time is valuable. So I will pay a premium because that's fair.
Right.
But it's his product that I'm buying.
Right.
I'm buying directly from him.
To at least get started when you to figure out kind of, is this even for me?
Mm.
You know, I guess in this case, it would be wholesale.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's how I get there. Now this business, you've been in it a long time and you've been out of the accounting profession for a while. How did you have a fear going out on your own, or was it your father's seeing your family that way? Is it just, there was no fear?
I didn't quit doing accounting until maybe 5 years ago. I still ran businesses for people, and I had seen how their businesses work, and I had watched successful people and not successful people run businesses. So I had an idea of what it took. I wasn't scared at all because I had waited till my income had by far surpassed what I was making as an accountant. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, and this is not even a fair statement to say at all, and it does not help anybody out there who's trying to take the entrepreneur leap. My husband has a full-time job with health insurance. So is that much of a leap?
Right. No,
that's,
I get what you're saying.
I would never compare myself to somebody else who is, you know, done this and is the breadwinner, and that's it. That's all there is.
But you stayed in the accounting. I mean, I think the real comment there is you didn't just take a leap.
Oh, yeah.
You were very calculated in getting to that place. How many double days were there for all those years to get you to that place?
Starting out on eBay and doing consignment, I worked as many hours as I could possibly stay awake just to get it going. I don't know why. I don't know what led me to do it, but I did.
I think there is no easy button. You have to put your time in no matter what. And do you want to put in an upfront, or do you want to put it in over a long, long, long period of struggle? And my advice is put in an upfront.
Right.
Stay in your job. Do this part-time. Yeah. Let it develop. Let it evolve. Because there is a point when this – you will hit a wall. I think everybody hits a wall, and that's really kind of where this podcast is, to help people get past that wall. But we all hit it, and to get past that $20,000 or $30,000 a month in sales, which really you need to get to get to an income level, it's very difficult.
It can be. It can be if you don't have that cash flow, if you're not able to shove everything right back into business. It can be very difficult.
Yeah, imagine starting this business and having to take a paycheck from day one. That'd be very, very difficult, if not impossible.
I don't know that you could.
Yeah,
I mean, unless
agree.
You just lived on $1,000 a month, you know, and had three other roommates, and, you know, I think then you could, if you were 22 and your overhead was really low and you drove a beater car and, you know, you didn't have kids and all those things. If you had all the odds in your favor, you could.
But then life will happen. It will rain, as Dave Ramsey will say. It will rain. You will need an umbrella, and you're not going to have one in that scenario.
You're 22, so. You hope your parents bail you out of it, you know, so...
What's the best advice you ever received?
Know your numbers. How boring is that?
I like that, though. That's a great – it's an easy one. Know your numbers. And I don't – I know people are counting on these systems, Inventory Labs or Scanpower, to do a lot of that math. But there's a lot of accounting outside of that I don't think people realize, you know. It's a lot harder than –
It is. It's a lot more –
Wait till they have to do their taxes. They'll find out. Exactly. It's a lot harder.
Exactly.
So you're – not a perfectionist, but you're, I don't want to say tenacious, that's my word, not yours. You're determined. Is that the best personal habit that you think really contributes to your success? Or do you have a personal habit that contributes to your success?
A different personal habit, like a thing that I physically actually do versus just like something that mentally, you know, I think determination is mental. Something that I physically do is I stay on top of paperwork. And I know that's so boring, isn't it? I'm sorry, Stephen. But I file my paper, and I keep up on my bookwork. I just don't ever let it get behind. I've got my taxes ready to go like by February 10th, if I can. Depends on when we get our 1099, of course. But I have it ready to go just as soon as I have that 1099. It's gone.
That's so, great advice.
Yeah.
That's really great advice, because it is – it's crazy. Fourth quarter, if you're up on it all year, you're not going in a crazy mode.
No, I had nothing. Like at the end of the year, I have to enter December's, and that's it.
What bookkeeping service are you using – any software are you using?
Okay. So in the past, I have used QuickBooks. I used it for years and years and years, and I even used it as an inventory control method. God bless me. For years on eBay, and that was not smart. And then I have used a little bit of Inventory Lab here and there, but I internally just know my numbers. So now I have chosen to just be really, I liked something. The deal with QuickBooks, for those people who haven't used it, is you go in and enter, like, let's say you get your statement from Target, and it tells you all the things, you know, that you've purchased. So you enter Target. Well, in order to remember if you have entered that for the month or not, you have to go back and search through all your transactions. I decided I didn't want that stress anymore, and that because I already knew as an accountant what a 1099 what your Schedule C is looking for, I could easily just make my own spreadsheet, and then I would know if I had entered Target, because it's just right there. And I just enter cost of goods sold. I don't do anything individual for tax purposes on that end. That's where Inventory Lab comes in. And so it's all laid out just in flat format. It's not bundled up in QuickBooks where it's all, you know, compiled and then makes a pretty report. I don't need that anymore to tell me, because I've done it for so long. So this year I just did a spreadsheet. I just try to do the easiest, simplest, non-stressful. I can pick up right where I was before, and I know exactly what I was doing. And it tells me, you know, for what I'm looking for, I have it laid out how I want. I don't think that's probably the way to go. If you're new, I think you still need QuickBooks.
Yeah, I think that's pretty intimidating for a lot of people. QuickBooks can be – there's some easy things. It can do some amazing things, and they're much more complicated. And I think a spreadsheet isn't a bad place for people to start because they probably have nothing to begin with.
Yeah, and they need to have something though from their accountant to know what to even put on that sheet.
Well, I think a lot of people are just going to end up using Inventory Lab.
Sure.
And again, now, you know, the way I remember looking at Inventory Lab, you can enter in other categories.
Yep.
But, you know, I've seen people say, hey, these numbers aren't perfectly in sync, you know. And yep. So, you know, I think you have to use an accountant, of course. I guess, you know, I think your simplicity is really, I like it, though, because you're comfortable with it. You can support it,
right?
Yes. And you don't want to make this some big corporation. You could go work for a big corporation if you wanted to, right?
Right. And I think that's what it really used to stress me out. QuickBooks just stressed me out when I had to figure out what was already in there and what wasn't. And did I catch everything? And, you know, how will I know? And for me, a spreadsheet just worked easier. But it isn't for everyone. So, you know, take that with whatever you feel like you need to do for you.
I like it. So where are you going to go? Now, you know, your business is not plateaued by any stretch. You're going to grow this year. You're going to grow really well. You clearly have, you know, you understand where the business was. You've been moving and bobbing like everybody else,
right,
trying to stay ahead of Amazon and changes and all the crazy things. You've clearly expanded into the other categories. What's next for Darla?
That is a really good question. I feel like I just need to get through quarter four and then I can answer you.
Okay.
You know, we've got some transitioning. We've got a child going to college and, you know, in the next couple of weeks. I mean, I kind of feel like maybe life is where my transition is, not so much in our business. And I know that's not the answer you want, but this is, you know, you had asked if everything falls together, our business is in our life. And then for us to do that, we have to be able to take time to do the things that are important. And so this year, where does that lead? I'm hoping that we can provide more lists to more people for the gated categories. I'm hoping we can expand out into other lists if that's what it seems like, you know, we want to do with the four partners that we have. And then I want to grow our business, but not so much in sales because we know that really doesn't matter. I just want to be able to find products that have a larger ROI, which has been my goal even in 2015 from 2014, is not to grow so heavily as much as it is to find products that give a larger profit margin. So, you know, you don't have to scrape stickers and you don't have to bag everything or box everything or whatever it is. Try to find things that are really low maintenance and not, they don't get returned maybe as much, even if they get returned like shoes, that they're sellable when they're returned. It's not something that's completely broken. I mean, I have some lava lamps. I don't know if you've ever sold any.
By the way,
not so much of Olo because they all come back.
Yeah, they all come back.
They all do. And So I'd really like to get away from, I'd like to get smarter. You know, don't be sucked in by, oh, that's so cute. Isn't that fun? Lava lamps. I remember those when I was a little girl. Must have those. Everybody will want one. Yeah, no.
Well, I think that's great advice. So you've experienced that, right? So you've been able to bring up your average selling price. And I think that that's just a smarter move, right? So you're selling fewer items at a higher profit margin. There's less work. As you say, you're getting smarter about, well, I can make $35 on this one or this one, and this is likely to get returned. I'll go back to the other one. I think that that's great advice to get to that place in your life. And the beauty of this business is that allows you the time to flex on your personal life. I just think that's so well thought out, really well thought out.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're just about to the end of the podcast, and I did want to see, is there any books or podcasts that you listen to that you think our listeners would benefit from?
No, you're not going to like this answer, but I haven't listened to anything in 8 months.
Oh, wow.
I took a break because I think sometimes when there's an influx of a lot of people doing them, the feeling is, oh, I'm missing out on something. And you have to sometimes step back and say, is that a good return on investment? Even with podcasts and Spreecast, is it really a good return on my investment? Like, am I doing something that is really enjoyable for me? Because for me, I like to binge on Netflix when I'm working versus listening to a podcast. And some people really like to listen to Spreecast and podcasts and all those things and get information while they're working. That is sort of like double working for me. You know,
That's fair. And I think, you know, the thing that I find sometimes I listen to them even and I'm like, oh, I should be doing that. And then I start to doubt myself. And I come, so I get that. I think that there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm selective. And I love that yours is recorded and you can listen to it anytime and not feel, and it's never live. So you never feel like I'm missing out, because I know, like when Spreecast was going on, I know that they were recorded, but if I didn't listen live, I felt like I was missing something because the chat was always going and I would go to make a comment because the chat was going and you couldn't because you weren't listening live. And so it took away from that experience and I felt, you know, it was just frustrating for me. So I gave that up, listening to anything recorded. And then eventually I just gave up listening to live because I just really had to pull back. I, you know, kind of been on listen to them all for a while there.
Well, but again, that's you putting your life in, your pieces in place. I think, again, that's a maturity that a lot of sellers right now haven't figured out, and they're wondering why they feel stuck and they wonder why they're spinning their wheels. I think the advice is smart. Turn everything off, including this podcast. I get it. I won't be offended. I want you to get unstuck. So your advice in some ways is, if you are starting to feel that way, turn everything else off, turn off the noise, and get down to work. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. So Okay. All right. So last part of the podcast, what I'm looking for is something our listeners can come and put into place, some kind of process improvement, something they can do tomorrow to move themselves forward.
Well, can I give you two things?
Okay. You can give me eight things.
Well, you know what I want them to do, right? Because, you know, I'm going to ask them to do is get their bookwork up to date tomorrow or the next day or this weekend. So that way, when you get into quarter four, it's maintenance. It's not catch up. But really, if you're rolling your eyes and thinking, oh my gosh, I work better under pressure and I'll do my paperwork on April 14th, like every other year, then I think that you need to get a repricer and get the profile set up, or whatever, whatever repricer you're using, you need to get your information product into there, set up correctly, and let that run a few times without going live. So you're testing it to see what it's changing. So you get familiar, let it do it now in this slow time. And so that way, when you start getting into this busier time and you're loading more and more products, it's already, you've already know how to do it. You know how the system runs, because it's very hard to set up a repricer when you have a lot of products going in and little time to put into the repricing part of it.
Yeah, I had a great piece of advice.
Repricer last year, and I had in December, I turned it completely off. I don't know what happened. I don't know if Amazon switched the API or it didn't work for me. And I had to babysit my product in December every day. I wanted to kill someone. So I'm not going to let that happen this year. And I've already switched repricers, and it's an intuitive one. I'm just not messing.
Well, I think it's they're both great pieces of advice. So the first one, take that mental baggage off of your plate, right? Because you're carrying that baggage. You could say, oh, I'll catch up to it, but we're all carrying that baggage if you're behind. So get that off your plate so you can have a clear head. And then, as you're suggesting, now is the time to test. So you're going to have to name the repricer that you're using.
I use Feedvisor. It's not cheap.
Okay.
I don't think it's what you
not cheap.
Start with.
But you said you can do it in test mode. I think that that's critical, too. So you can see how it's going to work and see, oh, this is what happens when I do that.
Feedvisor, you cannot, because it's intuitive and it's so smart. And once you use it, you understand why you don't have to have it test. But if you use Repriceit or AppEagle, those both run, and you need to run those in test mode before letting those go live, because they are not intuitive. They only do what you tell it to.
But Feedvisor is not. Feedvisor does not allow you to test. However, it's intuitive.
Right. This is really smart. Okay. And you go into each item and you list your cost, and then you list your floor and your max, and it takes it from there.
Hold accounting terms. I will have a link to that in the show notes today, too. Okay. All right. Darla, how can people get in touch with you? We already mentioned that they can reach out to your group.
Sure. They can friend me on Facebook. I mean, I'm available.
Okay. So yoursourcedinventory.com is the website, or facebook.com/group/yoursourcedinventory. Ask to join. They'll allow you in. You'll get a chance to see what's going on in there. Or you can friend Darla, and I'll have a link to her Facebook account out there. Okay. I really appreciate you taking the time, and especially explaining this new service out there. I think there are people that need it, that value their time and need some help. So I do appreciate the way you guys have set this up and limited the number of people. And I just think that's really well thought out. So wish you nothing but success, and look forward to seeing you.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Have a great week.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.